This is an interview with Elaine Myers, who was an Army nurse during World War I. Could you tell us something about how you happened to join the Nurse Corps?
Well, I had just finished training. I trained in the Philadelphia General Hospital. And then I went and took a course in communicable diseases. And I had just finished when war broke out. And I went right away and enlisted. And I think I told you I didn't go to any camp. And I felt I was cheated because so many of the girls went to camps around and they had such good times. And I was sent right up to Gun Hill Road, General Hospital number 1. But I don't remember doing a lick of work up there. And I roamed around that. It was a great big place. And I roamed around that hospital for 10 days, I guess, or 2 weeks. And then I was sent down to New York to be fitted for my uniform. And our uniforms were the ugliest thing.
Tell us about them. What were they?
But, you know, we had to go to Coward Shoe Store, and we had these big, clumsy-looking shoes. But I only wore those shoes when I was going places, because all the time I was in France, I wore boots.
Where did you pick those up? Did you have them before you went?
Before we went, we had everything that we needed. Rain hats, raincoats, and we needed them more than anything.
More than France.
And boots, rubber boots that came up to our knees. And we wore those boots all the time.
Well, that would indicate that the fields, the grounds were muddy.
Muddy and dirty. You'd go from a tent to your operating room and you just slush through mud. And that I did.
Then what was the rest of the... What was the rest of the uniform? Long skirt at that time, I imagine.
Our dress uniform was blue, navy blue. We had the navy blue blouse with a little white turnover collar and white cuffs and a blue Norfolk jacket and a skirt.
A Norfolk jacket, I don't think I've heard about those before.
You haven't?
No.
Well, if you haven't heard about it or seen it, you've missed something.
Can you describe it?
There was big old tan coward shoe. But we were very dressed up, I'm telling you. And velour hats. We wore blue velour hats.
Well, that sounds very fashionable.
No.
The velour hats.
Well, they were very fashionable then. You know, that was in 1917.
Yes, of course. Mm-hmm. Were the skirts woolen?
Yeah, we had woolen suits and woolen underwear. And you know, when I was in the few weeks I was in New York before we sailed for for overseas, I had a roommate. She was from Fall River, Massachusetts. And her mother came down to stay with her before she went overseas. Mm-hmm. And I had an old mustard-colored coat, great heavy coat. And she said, "What are you going to do with your coat?" here, Elaine. And I said, oh, I don't know. I'm just going to give them away, I guess. And she said, maybe I better make something out of this for you. And she made me a pettiskirt. And I wore that all the time. And I almost froze to death. I was never warm one day while I was in France.
Well, what kind of heating? Just wood-burning stoves?
It was cold and rainy, and we went from one camp to another. We were in Soissons for the Meuse-Argonne offensive. And then we went on up to, we went up as far as Montfaucon. Mm-hmm. And when I was up there, I was stationed in a hospital in Toul and Nancy. And sometimes I worked in a French hospital, and sometimes I worked in a tent. It just was where I was needed. And after the war was over, I would take men that had to be transported immediately down to the port of embarkation and put them on a ship. Yes. And then I'd go back to some other part of France and pick up some other boys at a hospital.
Do you speak French?
No, no. I don't speak French or anything.
Well, it seems you got along very well.
Well, we in the French hospitals, I didn't do badly. And you know, the nurses in the French hospital in those days, I don't know whether they still do or not, they wore veils on their caps that hung way down their back, so I took a piece of gauze, put around my hair, and let it hang down my back, so I have a French cap. But laughing time you had to make yourself because you were busy. I was busy every minute.
Yes, I'm sure.
As I remember. One time on my trip to the port of embarkation, I went to Savenay. I wanted to go and see a girl I had known in one of the hospitals. And there I met Jane A. Delano. And she was our chief army nurse. She was quite a person. She was she was a niece to Franklin D. Roosevelt. Mm-hmm. And an aunt, not a niece, an aunt.
Oh, I see.
And I met her in the hospital before when she was sick there in Savenay. And I met two girls that I later met here in St. Petersburg. They belonged to my American Legion Post.
Oh, yes.
And I joined here in St. Petersburg.
Mm-hmm. Let's see, we got a little ahead. I wanted you to tell us something about the ship you went on.
We went on the Leviathan.
The Leviathan, and it was a troop ship.
That was it was the German, one of their prize German steamships, and it was beautiful. Mm-hmm. It was beautiful. It was a beautiful ship.
That's great.
And that's what we went over without a convoy in 4.5 days.
4.5.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know ships went that rapid. I didn't know that ships were able to work up that much
across
speed.
The ocean. Well, we had an entirely, of course, the Navy had taken over the Leviathan, and we had an entirely American crew on board. And the captain said, we can go over in 4.5 days. If we go without a convoy, and we did, we zigzagged across that ocean in 4.5 days.
Do you know whether these were ships, the German ships you mentioned that we used, were they ships that had been impounded after the beginning of the war?
At the beginning of the war.
Mm-hmm. We just took them over and used
them.
Turned
into troop ships.
Mm-hmm. And I think you said there were 100 nurses.
There were 100 nurses, and I think there were 8,000 men on board.
And the nuns?
Hmm?
The nuns? You mentioned the nuns. With the nuns who were going to France.
Oh, I don't know where they were from. They were from the Order of St. Joseph.
They were American, though.
They were Americans. And they were not in the army. They were going over to a mission school. And I don't know how they got on the army ship, but I think they were needed over there, and they just took them. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Someone with pull got them on. More about your experiences working with the men. Do you remember any unusual?
Yes, I remember working. We worked in Soissons. We worked in tents at first, and then we went to a French hospital. I don't know the name of it. And then we went on up wherever they were having a major offensive. And Dr. Crail, who was from Cleveland, I think. Are you from Cleveland?
No, I have a brother who's living there.
Well, I think Dr. Crail was a very noted, isn't there a Crail clinic in
there
Cleveland?
Maybe, I don't know the city that well.
Well,
I just
anyway,
visited occasionally.
He was a very noted man here in the United States. And up there on my wall, I have a picture of my old colonel.
Oh, yeah. I'll have to look at those when I get up. Sorry, I dropped something.
But he was the colonel of our base. We would be up the front for 2 weeks. Then we had to go back to our base because my colonel wouldn't allow his nurses, his team of nurses, to go up to the front for more than 2 weeks at a time. And then we'd go back to our base and stay for 2 weeks or so. And then we'd be sent up to another, when they were having another offensive. We went up to Verdun, we went to Montfaucon, and that was right on the Alsatian border. Do you know that part of France at all?
No, I don't.
And
having read about it.
I was in a French hospital in Toul for a long time. I would go from there and work wherever I was needed. But I don't remember too much about the work I did. I know I was busy every minute and cold every minute. Cold. I suffered from the cold terribly. I say that I never even got warm.
Well, I'm not surprised.
But I met my husband in Montfaucon. And as soon as we got back to the States, we were married.
He was with our troops. He was with the American troops.
Yes, he was a captain in the 78th Division.
Mm-hmm. And So then you came back to the States, and if you could go on about that.
And then when I was married, I lived in Maryland. I lived in Annapolis, Maryland. My husband was born and reared in Annapolis, and you couldn't get him away from there for anything except the war. And he was one of six brothers, and they were all in the service excepting one. And Walter had a large family, and he stayed home and took care of the business while the other boys went into service.
Did they all come back? Did all those who went?
They all came back. Lewis came back with them. Lewis never went overseas, but he developed TB. And he just worked in camps around the United States here. But he never gave up working. He worked all the time, and he eventually died just about 6 years ago of lung cancer. But Charles and Henry and George's were all overseas.
And you met your husband there. Was he a patient, or did you just was he a patient?
No.
Of yours, or?
No, I just met him. I don't know how I met him. You met so many, and
yes.
It was just a casual acquaintance at first. And you know, when I wrote to my sister and told her I'd met this man and I had become engaged to him, and she wrote back and she said to me, "What is his background?" And I thought, "My golly, I don't know." And so I wrote and told her how he looked and all about him. I said, he's superintendent of his Sunday school, and he's a good Presbyterian, which I was.
I was fortunate.
I don't know whether I was a good one or not. But I thought, well, I have to say something else about him. And I said, at the very end I wrote, and a good Republican, because my family were always Republican. And you know, I was married to the man 2 months before I knew he wasn't a Republican. But it didn't make any difference.
No, I'm sure it didn't make any with you, but it might have made a difference with the family, a slight difference.
Well, now, you know, it didn't. My brother-in-law came, he was the brother-in-law that took care of everything and everybody. He called me up when they were having an election. And he said, "Elaine, are you registered?" And I said, "No, I'm not, but I'd like to be." So he said, "I'll come down and get you, so you can register." And going up the hill, I lived way down to the foot of the hill, going up the hill in the car, Walter said to me, "Now, Elaine, I don't know what your affiliation is, but," he said, "I'm going to tell you. It would be wise for you to register as a Democrat, because only the niggas and the white trash are registered Republicans."
Oh my.
So I said, "What did you say?" And he repeated himself. And I couldn't imagine my brother-in-law saying anything like that. But when I got up to City Hall, out in the corridor, there was full of men, and one woman, And she was a sister-in-law of mine, and she was sitting clerk. And they were all patting me on the back and saying, oh, it's so nice to know you, Mrs. George, so on and so forth. And so I went in to register, and the girl said to me, are you Mrs. George Myers? And I said, yes, I am. And she said, oh, you know, I've known George since he was a little boy. We went to school together and so on and so forth. And so she took my name and all my history. And then she said, and your affiliation is? I said, Republican. She said, did you say Republican? And I said, yes, I did. So I went out and I said to my brother-in-law, I just joined the niggas in the wet trash.
Good for you.
So when my husband came home, I was up in the sitting room and I didn't go down to meet him at the door. And he came running up the stairs and he stopped in the doorway and he threw his head back and he laughed. He said, I hear you gave my brother a joke this morning. And I said, I did. Why? How? And so he said, you know, this town is very democratic. And I said, well, you don't mean to tell me all your brothers are Democrats. He said, they were born and reared Democrats. And he said, and I guess that's why we are Democrats. So I said, well, it doesn't make any difference, does it? And he said, no, not to me it doesn't. So we would go to vote together, and he would vote as he wanted to vote, and I'd vote as we never talked about it.
Mm-hmm. Good way to keep peace in the family. Oh, you mentioned that you conducted a travel business.
I didn't conduct a business. Now, I went to work for the Franco-Belgique travel company. I took one tour for them, and I took 11 girls from Sweetbriar College. We were to be gone, and we were gone, 3 months. We were gone over 3 months. We visited 11 countries, and you know, I'd never done it in my life before. I didn't know a thing about conducting a tour. And but we had a very good time, and I had wonderful girls with me.
Well, I hope you had someone else to take care of the tickets.
Well,
travel arrangements from country to country?
They were all taken care of in New York before I went. And they were just given, our bills were paid, our hotel bills and things of that sort. And I had all these papers. They didn't mean a thing to me. But the ship, we went over on the Vulcania, which was an Italian ship, and it was a beautiful ship. And they told us they were spending an entire day in Gibraltar. We were not scheduled for Gibraltar, but the girls all said to me, let's get off the boat, Mrs. Myers, and spend the day on Gibraltar, which we did. And we walked all around. We saw the monkeys and everything. And the girl said to me, we went up the topside where the British soldiers were bulleted, and they were so delighted, you know, to see all these pretty American girls that they just wanted to do things for us. And there were two young lieutenants and the sergeant. They said, let us show you Gibraltar. So we said, fine. I said, well, now I'll tell you. I'll let you show us Gibraltar if you will let me take you all to dinner, to luncheon. Oh yes, they were glad. And we saw Gibraltar from one end to the other.
This concludes the interview with Agnes Elaine Myers, who served with the Army Nurse Corps during World War I from September 1917 until after the end of the war. The interview was done by Ruth Benonis of the WOSL Tampa Bay unit.